Hello, welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with me, Sam Pryor, and my co-host, Aidan Roberts. Just Aidan and I this week, and amongst other tangents and rambles, the main topic was supposed to be, are the guys at the top of climbing underpaid? It's been a bit of a topic of conversation in climbing for the last few months, and it's time for Aidan and I to wonder about it and draw no conclusions whatsoever. And if you're enjoying the podcast and would like to support us, we have a Patreon page that is available via a link in the show notes. It has a couple of tiers, one tier which has a bit more content, and the other tier which gives access to our Discord channel, which is now absolutely awash with site climbers who I'm sure you would have a lot in common with. And also, we give you a heads up of the guests who are coming on. You can suggest questions and suggest guests and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to help us keep the podcast advertisement free so we don't have to cut to break every half an hour, then that is the best way of doing it. But thanks a lot for listening.
Not very cold here. Don't rub it in.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Is it freezing over there?
No, it's actually about to warm up. Spring, it looks like spring's finally arrived. Keep saying that. 2 days ago had the most snow I've seen at, like, in my whole time.
Was in, like, in your whole life, or?
No, I've probably seen more snow than that. But, like, there was just so much snow that came down in, like, one dump.
How much are we talking? Are we talking in feet?
Oh, I don't know.
Yards?
How many yards? Yeah, no, probably not that insane amount, but just an insane amount for late April. And turns out it's unseasonable even for folk here in Finland.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel better.
Okay.
But well, it's nice. I mean, it was like a winter wonderland. I saw a moose.
You saw, what, a real one? They're massive, aren't they?
No, moose? No, a fake one, mate.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shit question, wasn't it?
Sorry, mean. yeah, a massive one. Yeah. Stomping across the road.
God, yeah, because I've only seen them in video format, but yeah, I've always fancied seeing a good herd of meese.
A herd of meese. I find it hard to know whether that is lots of mice or moose, because I feel like it's close to both, but it's neither.
Well, I presume, yeah, I mean, well, it's just actually, moose, isn't it? It's just moose. It's just moose.
Yeah, many moose. I actually saw a lot in autumn, but that was the first I've seen in spring. Yeah, winter's back. I think it's on the way out now.
Well, one day. It's nice that it brought a moose with it.
Yeah, and the snow. Snow's kind of, it's kind of like novel. I'm probably not going to get snow for quite a while now.
We haven't had a flake this year.
But in Central Lakes, I have.
Yeah, you had some in the lakes, didn't you?
There was two occasions. It hasn't snowed much in Central Lakes at all. There was two occasions where there was just like biblical quantities of snow that just seized up the roads. There's one day where like, all the cars just got abandoned on the roads. Like,
it was I love it. Isn't that great fun?
It was like bumper to bumper. Well, yeah, it was great fun. Bumper to bumper traffic. But we actually walked half an hour into town. Our cousin was visiting and he was trying to get to a party, actually. And he was so determined. So we were like, we'll walk with you, mate. It was just like bumper to bumper traffic the whole way. And they weren't having fun. Everyone was not having a great time, but yeah. End up having to open the parish centre for them to stay overnight.
Wow, that's what a provincial story that is. Very quaint. Yeah, there you go.
The community rallied.
Open up the parish centre.
Yeah, we just spent
get
like
out three the hot cross buns.
Yeah, we just spent hours just like pushing cars onto the curb and
singing Kumbaya,
being like, yeah, there's B&Bs that way, or the restaurants would have been thriving in Andles, right?
Yeah, especially if it's a lock-in, people get stuck there.
Yeah. Wow, it's good content, this, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, you're listening to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast.
Welcome. Nice new t-shirt.
This?
Yes, I haven't seen that one before.
Recently got a shipment of Moon stuff. Ah. Big ups Moon.
Big up Moon. Not a sponsor, Moon. Nor an advertise, but we just like Moon.
I actually am sponsored by Moon now.
Oh, when did that happen?
Relatively recently.
How recently? Like, should I have known that?
No, as in like a month or something, you know. Like,
oh.
No time.
You haven't announced it on social media? Or?
No, I don't think they asked me to, so.
which comes to an interesting.
Yeah, I sort of feel like I'm, because I think the main thing that, I love working with Moon and I love doing, because I've kind of been around it for a while. I love like helping develop their products and stuff. And I'm obviously pretty active with the moonboarding. Love a good moonboard. And I do the benchmarking for moonboarding. So I feel like I've got my uses.
So yeah.
If all I did was climb and wear their stuff, then I'd feel a bit more obliged. But I don't really like posting on social media. And Ben's yeah. very good about it. Because Ben was once upon a time an athlete himself.
Yeah.
He knows that it can really suck when you're kind of told to do things by said company.
I'm going to be honest and not to scrutinize current Moon athletes, but from my perspective, for definitely the time we've been doing this podcast or the time I've known you, relatively similar amounts of time.
Don't say that. That's cat out of the bag stuff.
I'd say you're probably more active in Moon promotion than most Moon athletes I know.
I think
you've been you're only recently officially sponsored, but I think you've been a valuable asset to Moon.
Yeah, thank you. I like to think so too.
Yeah.
I like to think so too. But yeah, no, it's I've always thought it was really cool to be involved with a company that doesn't do shoes, because I don't want a shoe sponsor if I can. Yeah. Because I like being free with shoe choices.
Yeah. And apparel doesn't really need to be tech.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, your t-shirt, despite what some people might claim, your t-shirt is not going to help you climb a boulder.
Oh, I thought you said, one's t-shirt. I thought you were talking about my t-shirt. So, yeah.
That is a hell of a t-shirt. Is that anti-grav?
That is anti-grav, yeah. Wow. Hand tie-dyed.
But it's a nice job, that. That looks cool. I like those colours.
Yeah, no, they're pretty cool. Yeah.
We've got social climbing t-shirts that are tie-dyed as well. I like them.
Oh, really? Who tie-dyed them?
One of our patroons.
No way.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, wow. It is cool.
All these tie-dyes.
He was actually, he even mocked up some patroon merch that was tie-dyed, but I keep dropping the ball on merch. I keep starting looking into it and then getting sidetracked and forgetting about it.
Yeah, we'll do it this summer.
One day.
Yeah.
One day.
We'll look into some options when we're together in a room.
Which won't be that long.
Shouldn't be so long. Yeah.
When are you due to come back then from Finland? Because obviously I'm going to... That magic's not very far away. No, it's only... it's like 2 weeks, isn't it?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Probably then. Yeah. We seem to be climbing together in Magic Wood. I haven't been to Magic Wood since 2019.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you have anything particular that you want to try, or are you just going to play it by ear?
Probably the understanding is the thing I'm most keen
for. Yeah, very, very. It's probably the, for hard lines, do you reckon it's the coolest hard line there?
In Magic Wood?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's just big and has like an amazing rail on it.
Yeah.
I've not tried it.
People who've done it have told me that there's a certain element of danger money on the grade of it.
Yeah, it's pretty big, isn't it?
It's big. You don't want to fall off the top, but apparently it doesn't feel like the moves themselves don't feel too bad.
Yeah. I think maybe the bottom section's going to be pretty hard. The jump to the rear.
Yeah, because it ups the grade a bit, doesn't it? Because there's the knowing as well.
Yeah, which just goes along the rail and then tops out. There's also apparently a really hard project up the face next to Blown Away. You know Blown Away, the car?
I 7B? Saw them trying that, or I saw them looking at the holds.
Cool.
I saw Barefoot Charles looking at the holds of that.
Yeah, that was, I think, I know him and Jewel tried it.
Yeah.
And Clem was saying as well that it's meant to be really good.
The holds looked bloody dreadful.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I love that. I feel like I'd say that to most people and they'd look sad, but you actually smiled at that.
Really?
Ooh. Now I'm interested. Yeah, it could be your sort of bag as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going off much, but I'm kind of like, it's nice. It's like it's been a trip of many eras and I'm looking forward to this era.
Yeah, I was actually thinking when we're out there, I might take my microphone and we could do a Magic Wood special.
Yeah. Well, this is actually something I wanted to run by you. Maybe it doesn't need to be on the podcast. I had this idea for like a little, like, maybe they'd be like mini shows.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking some of the nicest conversations are done quite spontaneously when I'm like just out walking with someone. I mean, obviously they'd have to be consent. You wouldn't just be like recording all the conversation. But like, they'd be like podcast episodes. I guess it'd be a bit slower. But they'd be like, in conversation with, as opposed
perfect.
To...
Yeah. It was at least a year before I told you that I was recording you, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was just like, wow, Sam's so keen to catch up.
Move to the left.
Yeah. I can't hear you now. Recording in progress. I'm sure it's nothing, mate.
Yeah. That's why I just, at the end, I just get up and walk out the room.
Yeah.
Bye.
See you next week, mate.
but as for Finland, then, how long have you got? Have you booked a ferry?
No.
Okay.
I shall.
You should at some point you shall.
Yeah. I will have a look at dates. I think it's starting to get pretty warm.
Well, I mean, at least with the snow, hopefully it means it's not too warm for a bit. Hopefully you have a bit more time.
No. Yeah. No. There's been some opportunities to climb.
When did you last climb?
I tried to climb yesterday and it was a bit premature considering I got that split on the video that I sent you that was like the session before last. And I was feeling really good in my body after that session where I like split. I did send you that video.
You did, yeah. Available on Patreon.
Oh yeah, of course. Available on our Patreon.
Yeah.
Oh, it's being paywalled.
So I did a really cheeky thing, but I didn't title the video. I just put an eyes emoji, so you wouldn't even have any clue as to what is in, like, what happens on that go.
Oh, can people see like a preview of it or something?
I think you can see a screenshot at least. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That is cheeky of you.
Yeah, don't mind stirring the pot just a touch.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was like a week ago. No, yeah, a bit less than a week ago. Pretty close.
I mean, yeah, very, very close.
Pretty
spoiler
close.
Alert.
Fired off the left hand, got a split. So then stopped the session. And then yesterday tried to climb with tape and actually warming up. Like I often pull on from a move in and I felt so good.
Oh, like it felt, yeah,
the
yeah.
top, it all felt really easy. Like I felt like I had just like loads of like time to spare on each move. But then the first move is really hard with tape. And I had like a couple of tries of tape. But then I think because I was slipping with tape, I basically had like a threatening little like split patch as well. So then I had two fingers of tape. And then it's really hard to climb.
Yeah, I mean, one finger taped is bad enough.
I think I just need to be patient.
Yes. Did you make your fingers worse? How long before they're back to primo, no tape?
My skin has not been primo the whole time I've been here. Okay. But I think that's probably partly because I kind of ravaged it on Arrival of the Birds.
Arrival of the Birds?
I think he'll call it Arrival of the Birds and not The Gloam.
Oh, okay. How come?
Wow. I sense that you don't like that. Okay.
No, I don't mind. Although I did have quite a few messages from people saying The Gloaming was a really cool name. I'm just yeah, going to say that.
I did think it is a cool name, but it sounds a bit gloomy.
It sounds moody. That's what it is.
It sounds moody. Yeah, but, okay, I have a rationale with Arrival of the Birds. One,
sounds like a Hitchcock situation.
It's a piece of orchestral music, which I really like, but I'd say probably the main reason, and then another like small reason is Arrival of the Birds, I very much like associate with like springtime, and I associate that border with springtime. But the main reason is because as a climbing experience, and I think my experience with trying a climb was like really like just the experience over necessarily doing the climb was felt like such a big part of it for me with this one, especially that I kind of wanted something that paid a bit of homage to that. And it also was probably the moment I've had in climbing where find a place where I can like really like find some flow in that climbing, have like a really clear mind. This was probably the climbing experience where I felt like just like most present, like kind of like it was like a crazy, like I, it felt so meditative. Maybe that sounds cliche, but like I just had like such a clear mind. And then when I topped it out, basically the most memorable thing of that evening in terms of like the atmosphere was it was like a pretty quiet, peaceful spring evening. And there was just like loads and loads of birdsong, noticeably loud. I kind of thought like, ah, well, that was the thing like I maybe noticed most about the atmosphere and it climbed where I'd felt most present. So I was like, oh, it'd be nice to like kind of refer to the birds a little bit. And so Arrival of the Birds.
You didn't consider just birdsong?
Birdsong. No, I feel like birdsong. No, I never considered that.
Good book, Sebastian Faulks. Read it recently.
Ah, wow. Should we do a book review?
Brief synopsis. It's like Captain Corelli's Mandolin, but
oh,
with
which is
the
really
worst,
good. If you don't,
if you don't read the end, it's like Captain Corelli's Mandolin, but only slightly marred by an abysmally bad sex scene at the start, which is cringe-inducing, and I wish I didn't have to read it.
Well. Good effort for cracking on.
Yeah, I knew I actually had been tipped off. I knew beforehand that it was sort of semi-famous for having a really poorly written sex scene at the start of what is otherwise a very, very good war book. And I love it. Yeah. I mean, a war book's a great one done well. I would actually, if anything, I mean, this sounds a bit crazy for someone who's never lived in through a battle, but I'd actually say the fatality rate was a bit high. I mean, still 90% of people who went to World War One came home. When you read some of these World War One books, it's like the idea is that everybody died who went to the front, which is obviously not true. But that minor complaints of what was otherwise a very good read. 4 out of 5. Birdsong, Sebastian Faulks.
Birdsong sounds great. Probably won't be the name of this climb.
No, fair enough. Mate, as long as you get it right, as long as you're happy with it.
Wow.
Spots in time is better, but it's
actually
good.
Spots off time.
Sorry, spots off time. that's perfect.
Yeah, that's yeah. That's I'm pretty happy with that one.
But since then.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
My only request was that you didn't call it midnight, so I'm happy.
yeah, it's not midnight.
Yeah, so happy with that.
I'm unsure, you know, I'm sensing a lot of skepticism, but there's no rush.
I don't know, I don't think it's bad. It's something about the arrival of that seems a bit...
Arrival of the Birds.
I guess the problem is for me is it reminds me of the horror film The Birds.
What?
Or is it just Birds?
Is it a horror film?
Yeah, very famous horror film.
I just concretely do not watch horror films.
It's Hitchcock.
What's that? I forget that you were
raised under a bridge.
Is that a director?
Yeah.
Not under a bridge.
Sorry.
There's not so much infrastructure in the Lake District.
Yes. What kind of newfangled technology is this bridge? We do rafts.
Yeah. Hitchcock. Yeah,
it's Hitchcock, obviously a very famous director.
And sorry, don't remember it. It's not obvious.
And one of his most famous horror films is The Birds, which sounds a bit silly now, but basically it is, I think, I actually haven't seen the film, but I think the concept is a constant plague of killer birds ruining everyone's time. Put that on the back of the DVD.
Wow. Yeah. Damn. Maybe you should listen to Arrival of the Birds, see what you think. It's quite good music.
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's quite good, yeah. I'm going to guess
I quite like it. Yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah.
But also, it doesn't matter. Even if I hate it, which I don't, it doesn't matter if I don't like it. You've just got to like it. It's your climb.
Interesting. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but the thing is, I like it for the experience I've had on it already. Maybe I should call it experience. I like that bit of classical music as well. Is that Einaudi? Yeah.
Experience the birds.
Yeah. No, I think experience.
The birdling experience.
Oh, yeah. Why not? That's a good piece of music as well.
Yeah.
That is true. However, I wouldn't say I necessarily name the problems for myself because, I mean, I've already had my experience climbing the problem.
But what is always the case is no matter what you... The naming thing is quite interesting, isn't it? Because it's like freedom of expression in that, you know, up until relatively recently when we've gone back in time to kind of edit out things that are like inappropriate, the whole concept is you can call it whatever you like, which I think is quite cool. It's a good, like freedom of expression. I quite like that. But in naming something whatever you like, inevitably some people won't like it. I admit that I don't think Alphane has a good name. I don't think you should put a line. I don't think it should be called Alphane because it's next to Alphane Moon. I think it should be called something else.
But that, okay, in Sean's defense, is actually the equivalent of me saying having had to come up with a name really quickly after having done the Midnight Project because I had a deadline for a film. And Alphane was always just referred to by everyone when it was a project as Alphane.
I think it just because here's a hot take, which some people might not appreciate, and I apologize in advance, but I don't think Alphane Moon is a very good climb. There, I've said it. I don't think it's that good. And so yeah. I think Alphane, which clearly is an amazing line, deserved to take the kind of star role in that cave, not be kind of like a derivative.
Ah, okay, yeah. I would agree Alphane is not a good climb. But I think the existence of that cave is very cool for sake of everyone's trip to Gina.
Yes, yeah, exactly. If it's raining, you can go and have a go at Alphane Moon.
I actually had a session there.
By the way, you just said Alphane isn't a very good climb. I think you mean Alphane Moon isn't a very good climb.
The Creatures of the Alphane Moon, yeah.
Oh, is that the full name?
Yeah. It's been written wrong in the guidebook.
Oh, it's quite a good name, that.
The Creatures of the Alphane Moon, yeah.
That's a good name. That's a great name.
I mean, it's Dave's great with names, isn't he?
Yeah, and there's an art to it. There's an art to good naming, and I think sometimes you just nail it.
They're mostly after books, so it's a collection of sci-fi books.
Yes, yeah, so there was someone on the Patreon that was suggesting we should start a Dave Graham book club, reading the books based on his names. Because I think there's a lot of sci-fi books, aren't there? So,
yeah, that's one of them, yeah. I think there's quite a few of that series which are problem names. But yeah, I think that problem has been whoever glued on the final hold has a lot to answer for. because they did it awfully. And also, apparently it was just like it fell off and was off that climb for like a year. And then mysteriously someone just glued it back on. But like for ages, and it left like a crimp, like a crimp edge.
Oh God.
Which like would have made, and okay, like the creature, the Alfheim moon, wouldn't really be a problem. But then like subsequently the top out was done. And if that tops out, that is a great climb. Slightly dampened by the fact that there's like a brick of granite terribly seeked onto the wall with like a mess of seeker surrounding it. Shame.
Do you think it could come off?
You'd have to work really hard. And I don't think you'd be able to get all the messy seeker off. And also at that point, like that's an interesting question. If you don't agree with holds gluing back on, which in this scenario I probably don't, and most scenarios I probably don't. I don't necessarily think crowbarring them back off is like the solution. No, I don't know. No. I don't know what's more natural at that
point. I wasn't suggesting a sort of tit for tat. You glue it on, I crowbar it off system. I was more thinking
crowbar it off and blow it with dynamite.
The way you said it makes it sound almost like it could come off when you were climbing. And
nope,
therefore
definitely no way that's coming off.
Okay. So if goal one of gluing on a hold is to make sure it doesn't come off, that part they nailed.
They nailed that and pretty much nothing else.
Okay.
But I am aware. And Greg made this point when we had him on the podcast of the elitist perspective of not gluing stuff on, because there probably is a selfish part of it for me in that I actually had a session, like the project which goes from where Alfheim starts and shares the first three moves and then just continues straight up the face and joins where the creature of the Alfheim moon would top out. That project is a pretty epic project. It's kind of like kind of a bit of a old project, but it's like it's basically just like longer and harder version of Alfheim.
Is that Alfheim right hand?
Yeah. One that like goes and then it joins the top of the creature, the Alfheim moon, and you top it out probably.
Yeah, the one I suggested gets called moon.
Moon. Yeah. Moon. Yeah. That it would be like, I think if that block wasn't glued on, I'd be like, wow. I would be like very, it kind of like is in my mind, that block. And it would just be like, it's just a very cool feature because it's just like such a big face of just like relentless hard climbing and like body tension. But now there's a big block which you get to like rest on before you do the top hat. Also, it's just a messy seeker block. But I'm rambling.
That's what we do, mate.
That's
the whole point.
We're rambling. But pretty good if it's rain days. And to be honest, it's not far from Madurod.
No, it isn't. No.
Probably like an hour?
Yeah. About an hour. Yeah, it is about an hour. Yeah. Because I did the thing the other way. Yeah, it's about an hour.
Oh, so nice.
Totally possible. But I hope you get time to get another good couple of sessions in on Burden before you have to come back.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, actually.
If you were to do Burden, what are the chances that you'll return to Finland in the next few years?
Well, what I would really like to do if I were to do Burden, and I kind of want to wait until so, is go and have a chuck at the old Sisu project.
Yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. I think everyone would be fascinated.
Yeah, the thing is I'm hesitant because
if it's a banger, you'd have to go back to Finland for it, and it's a long way.
Well, that's not my hesitancy. Basically, sounds very proud, but like,
ooh,
the moves on Burden for me right now compared to when I was here in the past, they just feel like so reliable. And so genuinely, it mostly feels like if I'm not thinking about my skin, I can do the first move. And then from there, it's like not slipping. Like it doesn't feel so like much of a physical thing. But I think I do just have to be more patient with my skin. And I think that I couldn't even have a session trying to pull on the positions on Sisu without seriously risking splitting, because the holds are tiny.
Oh, God. Wow.
But not like necessarily razor sharp.
The Japanese guys are out there making good, quick progress.
Ryuchi.
Mm.
Yeah. I've shared some sessions with.
So is there three Japanese guys out there?
Now, there was Toru that was coming in, Toru Nakajima. He was trying it. Turns out he's a geologist. I never realized. And his friend...
He put it down as a work trip. Expenses.
Yeah. And his friend Imashi, who was a photographer, they were here initially and they were super nice. And then just at the end of their trip, Kokoro and Riohei were here for like a little while. And they just left. And then towards the end, halfway through their trip, Ryuchi arrived.
Nice.
So they've kind of like been overlapping.
Cool. Moving on from that.
Yes.
Shall we talk about our topic?
What is the topic? Is it what the role of a professional climber is, kind of? And
in a sense, I just kind of wanted to wade into the debate that's been kind of, unfair to say the Sean Bailey debate, but it's more the debate that was brought into the spotlight, perhaps, by Sean Bailey, but has subsequently been had by lots of different people.
Because are you referring, he like put out a post last summer?
Yeah.
About that?
A while ago. I think the concept, or at least as the concept's been taken or interpreted, is about whether top climbers like Sean.
Top climbers being physically most capable climbers.
Yeah, exactly. Like just pure ability should be like well paid by climbing companies, because there are now climbing companies that are quite, you know, big business. If we look at the likes of North Face, for example,
and there are climbers making a lot of money. Basically.
And to be honest, I should also include Patagonia in that, because Patagonia is a $1 billion company. Like, I know they're a little bit careful with their PR, but they are still a $1 billion company.
So. There's big companies in climbing that have a lot of money.
Yes.
And I think it's fair to say some companies, often these companies all invest in different things, I think is fair to say. So some just pay less to athletes in general. Some pay a lot to athletes, but there's a caveat in like how they define an athlete. And I was thinking about this. Okay, what we're being talking about here is money.
We're talking about straight, yeah, we're talking
dollars.
We're
dollar just talking straight money.
We're
going to cut it down to the simplest terms. If you're talking about money, basically, it's pretty much like epitomizes transactional relationships. These are professional relationships. Like, there are like personable relationships with sponsors, and like that makes a big difference. But like the reason why big companies are investing in athletes is like really the money from big companies going to athletes in many ways is impersonal. And it doesn't feel like that, like necessarily when you work with sponsors and you work with good people, you obviously have personal relationships with them. But like the boss of their boss of their boss is like not going to like be happy if they're just chucking money at their mates, and eventually like there's going to be no longevity in that. So if you're just going to like strip it right down, there's a transactional relationship between an athlete and a big company, because somewhere in that big company, probably the people who pull all the strings of where like the money goes probably doesn't care that much about the relationship between an athlete manager way down there and an athlete to a certain degree. Okay, I'm going to say that's a bit of a reductive Yeah. But I don't know, would you kind of agree with that in many ways? Like, sponsorships are kind of transactional by nature.
The concept being that the role of the athlete in this world is to sell product for that company.
No. Exactly. Okay. Not necessarily sell product directly.
Well, obviously not as like a salesman, but because people see them wearing the product, it helps sell the product, which means the money comes in and a certain amount of that money should go back to the
climber. Like, the big company will pay this climber money and they expect something in return, and they expect something that is worth the money they pay.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I know this isn't the argument you're making, but there's also that even though we accept, or at least we accept that is currently the role of the athlete in today's society, the amount of money that's actually coming back to them is very, very low. So if they in their mind are giving back to the athletes what they think the athletes are generating, or a good percentage of what the athletes are generating, then they clearly don't think the athletes are generating very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is then the grey wishy-washy area, which I haven't made my mind up with. And I think it's the point of debate is, like, what is the value that these athletes give to these companies? And I feel like it's become very confused because there is some like sliding scale of what the role of a climber is, or a professional climber. And like, okay, say at one end you have physically the most capable climber, bouldered every, like, could bolt, like, okay,
all yeah, the numbers has, they've done all the numbers.
Numbers as numbers, they've done like loads of 9A pluses, but nobody's ever heard of them. Like,
okay,
no climbers even know of them,
so then they're irrelevant then for selling stuff. Not as a person, okay. But...
That's a bit harsh.
I'm saying, but like, they're not going to sell any stuff if nobody's heard of them, right?
Yeah, okay. And then you get a little bit more, like, well-known than that, and somebody who's spoken about in the media, or, like, kind of someone who doesn't really publicise their ascents, but, like, are known as climbers. And then you kind of, like, just have that all the way along to someone who is physically not a particularly capable climber, but publicises
their climbing. Is known by everybody.
Is known by everyone. Yeah. And like, kind of more of this like influencer kind of role.
Yeah.
Don't know. Yeah. And like, kind of
probably
like,
best we don't throw any names out for that.
I mean, I, but this is that the very fact that you say that, and actually I have a default of that as well, that that's almost like,
it implies that that's actually worse, whereas it's just different.
Well, yeah, I don't think it is worse. I have like a lot of respect for someone who's passionate about climbing and has made a living out of climbing. Like, that is pretty epic.
And difficult to do.
And they've done that without being physically as capable within climbing.
Which probably makes it even harder to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's funny that you have that reaction, because I also have that. And I feel like that is like a reaction that a lot of climbers have when they're like, oh, why do these people get... And I guess this is very much the top reason we're having this discussion, is because why aren't the best climbers towards the other end of the spectrum getting paid more? That the people we're talking about are the people who are very good climbers that aren't very good at publicising themselves. Because people like Adam Ondra or Stefano, or like, who publicise themselves well and are physically incredibly capable, are making a lot of money out of climbing. Like, it's just easier. It's easier to produce a lot of content when you are a really good climber. Well, it's easier if you like.
It's very easy, isn't it? You literally just shoe cam all your amazing sends and people are interested if you're at the absolute top of the game.
Yeah. But then along all of this, there is like different value in which these people offer to the sponsors. So like, I kind of think that people who are like a bit mysterious, you don't hear much about their climbing, but are very capable, offer quite a lot. Because there is like a certain, if you hear about an ascent, but you're not like getting a post every week, I think there's like, I do think there's a degree of quality over quantity someone like Sean Rabbity. I'm good friends with Sean, but I think for like a sponsor, like, and maybe I'm biased, but like for, I think for a sponsor, he's probably quite a valuable asset because there's a, like a certain mystique around him. He doesn't post very much on social media.
But do you think that makes him good for a company? Don't they want content?
No, but I think they are associated with what he does. And he does publicize the climbs he does. Like, he doesn't, like, throw out a load of regular content. But there's, like, a degree in which you do you associate with the achievement that people do and the things that people know about. Everyone knows he's done, like, Alphane, Megatron, things like that. Or do you associate yourself with, like, the amount of content produced around that, which is very small in that case?
Mm. Yeah, I see what you mean. You're buying into a character to a certain degree.
Well, in that scenario, but then like some companies might not value that at all and might just be like, right, we need content. And this is like probably much easier to see the transaction because it's like, okay, this many thousands of people have seen, or probably millions, this many millions of people have seen this and you're wearing this product. And so like, then that is maybe much easier to measure. But like, it's obviously then down to the companies about like how much they value all these different things.
Okay, so here's an issue then, is that if you've got one of these like really good social media influencer people, they've got loads and loads of followers and stuff, and they're really entertaining and people really enjoy them. Like, would they be still likely to buy the shoes that the influencer is wearing, even if they know the influencer is not a top climber? Or would they be more likely to buy what the top climbers are wearing, even if they haven't got as many followers? So basically, I'm kind of thinking that's a pretty poorly wording it.
No,
like,
no.
What's the conversion rate? Like, because I think, like, you know, if you're a top climber with like 20,000 followers, I reckon a higher percentage of those 20,000 followers are actually going to want to wear what you're wearing because you're doing the best stuff. If like an influencer person's got 200,000 followers, but perhaps only 200 or, you know, 1,000 of them are going to. So maybe a much smaller percentage. I've kind of mixed my,
my ratios
there, but no. I think you get the concept.
Yeah. And I mean, I assume we're kind of like touching on this subject now. I assume this is a conversation a lot of like people in companies
are, I imagine, having. This conversation is having at board level. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because I wonder how many of those people who are making those decisions are climbers.
Yeah. I imagine not that many.
Because I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough about other sports, but I feel like climbing is a place where character comes through a little bit. Like, I feel like character matters quite a lot within climbing. Climbing media, maybe that's actually naive. I don't know. I kind of feel like climbing media is growing quickly, but small enough so that there's an element of understanding people's character, and like that is probably worth in associating with to a certain degree. Like, you don't really have that with football or some massive thing, sports like that. I don't know, the teams couldn't care less whether someone's a good person or not. They just want them to play football.
I don't think it's that far off the mark though, realistically. Do you want your star striker to be a good bloke, or do you want him to score goals? I think in football, you want him to score goals.
Yeah. And I mean, football's an interesting, I've had some conversations.
But that's a whole other point, isn't it? Of like, do athletes need to be necessarily nice people?
Yeah, you kind of just hope people are nice. Extrapolating that analogy to like football, it is an interesting, like, because in that scenario where you don't take into account character at all, I mean, maybe there are other factors and there's also just a lot more money in football, but like, footballers are paid wholly for their physical capabilities and not at all for character, but also media. They couldn't care less whether they like post about scoring goals on social media. Like, I assume like a lot of footballers do. I don't really know. I don't really follow any, but like, they're like paid entirely based upon ability.
Yeah. So it's kind of like every big climbing company needs to have some athletes who are pretty much at the top of the tree as kind of proof of concept, don't they? Like, so if we look at shoe companies, for example, because that's like the most technical part of climbing equipment. If I'm just going to use anyone here, this is nothing specific, but if Tenaya, say, didn't have any pro athletes in their shoes, then you wouldn't be able to prove that they work. Mm. Like every climbing shoe company, at least, needs to have someone, or preferably more than one, who's at the top of the game to prove that their shoe is good enough to do whatever you want to do. Because let's face it, everyone buying the shoe, you know, statistically speaking, rounding up here, everybody who's buying it isn't as good as the top guy in the shoe. So they just need to prove if that guy can do what he wants to do in it, then it's definitely good for whatever crummy rubbish the rest of us are doing. So, you know, that's the concept, isn't it? So if we think a generic shoe company here, Tenaya, just simply wouldn't work without those people providing proof of concept.
Yeah.
So but if
I
so
feel
if,
like that this is a very niche subset of sponsorship, because
it is. And I know the shoe companies aren't as rich as the big clothing companies.
I feel like outside of shoes and chalk, we kind of drop off the real need for like technical association.
But I basically, the end of that thesis was that really that I think that those shoe companies don't believe that they give a particularly high percentage of their revenue to those people who are kind of showing that it works.
Mm, yeah.
Obviously, okay. That's sweeping. And I will add a caveat to this, because there was a lot of talk about how, you know, after this happened, there was a few people making comments about how, like, the IFSC prize funds are abysmally bad, and the athletes need a lot more money. And then in response to that, like, someone on our Patreon found the accounts that the IFSC, their sort of tax accounts that are publicly available. And unless they're massively diddling their accounts, which I'm sure they're not, because that would be fraud, there is not a lot of money coming in. So like big cash prizes aren't happening unless IFSC can make a lot more money. So there might be a case of me sort of guessing how much these companies are making and then like overestimating. So maybe, you know, they are giving a higher percentage, but I don't think so. I think a relatively small percentage is going back to those top athletes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I'd say in that scenario, maybe there's like an acknowledgement of excellence in like ability and like wanting to associate with that. Like then I think those kind of companies have to operate within the sponsorship space slightly differently, in that it's obviously really valuable to associate yourself with a better climber, even if the people who know about them are lower, because for like the reputation of the brand, it holds a lot more weight and can actually be detrimental to associate with a climber who's not particularly capable, or like a climber who's like renowned to have terrible footwork, or like is clearly like not like representing the technical side. It can actually be like bad to be like associated with them as well. I mean, maybe not bad, but like not valuable for sake of their like product. So like they probably have to operate slightly differently to the apparel companies that do have a lot more money to chuck at things, because yeah, it's more about like what you look like.
I guess the issue with the apparel companies is that it's difficult to actually equate how much. Because obviously the big apparel companies, like the North Face and Patagonia, for example, they're not climbing companies. They're outdoor companies. And a part of that is climbing. But they've got to try and figure out what percentage of their business is climbing before they even start looking at how much they pay their climbers, don't they? Because
Yeah. And that decision will be made way, way away from any climbers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the North Face motto is never stop exploring, isn't it? It's nothing about climbing. That's their motto, right?
Yeah. No, it's nothing.
When they buy sell £500 down jackets to people walking their dog in the park.
But yeah, no, it is like, it is interesting though. I can see the case for a company like that. Maybe where like appeasing the climbing community is probably very small fish to them, no matter how well they market themselves within climbing. Climbers are not going to make up a great portion of their sales or not going to bring in much income. And maybe it is more of a numbers game. I don't know.
Yeah, but this is the thing as well. It's like these companies, they've got so much money. Say they were like, if you know, a salary of like $50,000, whatever, a year for a company as big as the North Face, that is nothing. So,
and yet for a climber, like that would be like
game changing. Yeah.
Like ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do actually think climbers in the US get paid a lot more.
Maybe some, but there's also, I guess it depends where you're living. Because I think actually, to be fair, if you're living in like Boulder, Colorado, I mean, it's quite hard to even live, isn't it? it's an expensive place to live. So it's all relative to where you're living and purchase power and everything. But I mean, even if you doubled that, like to big companies, you know, their middle managers are on that kind of money. Well, the upper middle managers.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true.
So it's not like it's going to move the needle that much in their costs, and yet they still don't do it. I mean, like when they do their, what's their advertising budget when they put out, when they film a new advert, must be massive. Yeah.
Silly. Yeah, yeah. But that is interesting. It's like these are all decisions which are like made way away from climbers. And also I do think it's quite funny where budget goes. Different companies like assign different values to things, and often like marketing, there's way more money in marketing than there is in like athlete teams. And so you will get like companies throwing huge amount of money at film projects or like photo shoots and things. And I often see stuff like that. I'm like, wow, that would change my life.
Yeah, totally.
And you're kind of like, wow, you're doing like, yeah, there's a small project for this video or whatever. And it's like, if I had 20% of that, I'd be chilling.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wow, there were like, there's scales to this, levels to it.
And it's funny, isn't it? So basically what we've established is that the people who are currently in climbing, who are making like a good living, are kind of doing it themselves, aren't they? Like they're either really, really, they're really good at climbing and they're publicizing it well and marketing themselves well, or they're just really entertaining and marketing themselves well. But like, there doesn't seem to be anyone who's just climbing and they've got some like sugar daddy company coming with a big sack of cash.
I think the point that I was making there is like, I think like climbing is at a point now where people can get by by just being really good and like modestly.
Yeah.
Posted. Like, okay, I'm not really an influencer. I'm not that good at posting too regularly on social media. I put a lot of energy into social media through other means. I'm probably not like the most marketable as an influencer. And yet I make a living climbing. And like, that's pretty amazing. I know a lot of climbers who get paid a lot more than I. And like, climbers can just get by being quite good and posting quite modestly. But I think the people who are like making a lot of money out of climbing aren't tapping into like kind of the climbing based budgets, but are tapping into the marketing budgets. And as soon as like companies pick up on like that, I feel like there's a lot more money in it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So here's a question. Because we kind of mentioned the football analogy earlier. Should big climbing companies have a team, like a football team, that are properly well paid just to climb? And I don't mean like in a perfect...
footballers go and climb.
And I don't mean like in a perfect world. I mean like morally in your mind. Forget the fact that you essentially could be one of the people who are benefiting, which I know is a difficult thing to forget and is a wild bias, but but try and forget about that for a moment. Morally, should they?
No, I actually think they shouldn't. I actually think, okay, so I actually think it's like a pretty elitist mentality to think that we should get paid. Okay. I feel like I represent a physically capable climber, and I think it would be quite an elitist attitude to think that I should be paid more because I can do hard climbs, because I don't necessarily see, I struggle to quantify the value that that gives to a company. And I don't want to say conclusively that like it should be higher than it is kind of thing. So I really don't know. And I think nobody really knows the answer to that question. Like you get some managers that will like make the case for climbers that it is higher, but then like, I don't know whether that is completely the case. You get like really amazing climbers like Simon Lorenzi, who we had on the podcast, who's not a professional climber, but like one of the most capable boulders in the world.
He should be a salaried climber. Like that's a, for a start for 10, we should agree on that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, something crazy is going on there. But you get like that with loads of cases, like Toru. No, he's sponsored by... But, like, a lot of these people who, like, work and climb as well.
I think Ryuchi has a full-time job.
Is he... He's a route set?
I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I'm pretty sure he's got a full-time job.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I thought it might even be non-climbing based.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But there are like a lot of cases like that. Yeah, I mean, like Tori is a geologist.
But here was a funny one. If we go way, way back into our conversations, when we chatted with Drew Ruana, he was saying he wanted to go get a degree and to look into doing something outside of climbing because he wanted to have some financial stability and at some point, you know, buy a house and have a family and stuff. Isn't it a bit sad that he couldn't even see a way through with climbing that he could get to that?
But I think a certain part of that is you can't want to, because like if you're willing to, a climber of like Drew's ability definitely could market their climbing. If they're like smart about it, could market their climbing in a way that would make them a lot of money. But it's just like, maybe they're just not willing to do that, or like maybe that's not the role they want climbing to make. Because I think inevitably it is risky to make that commitment to being like, right, I'm going to make this climbing thing the source of my income. And like, inevitably you make changes to your climbing to do that. And it's kind of like, I think it is just has the potential of affecting our relationship with climbing quite a lot. And I mean, I feel very fortunate in that I don't feel like I've compromised on my like kind of relationship with climbing for it to become my profession. I still feel like I'm exploring it quite freely. But like inevitably it has to change a little. And I mean, the degree in which of energy and effort that you put into that may or may not change people's relationship with climbing for better or for worse. Like Magnus really changed his like relationship with climbing, I'm sure. Before he was ever posted a YouTube video, I don't know how well sponsored he was, but like he was like, he'd been on the World Cup circuit for years. He was really a climber, probably had all his sponsorship and stuff, but like, I have no doubt that his relationship with climbing has radically changed since he started doing his YouTube. And I mean, it seems to be quite good for him. Like he seems like to have taken up this role and seems very content with it. And like he's doing incredibly well out of it, but not that's not right for everyone. Like
the thing that I worry about for the YouTube boys, and by that, I mean the YouTube community.
Yeah.
I realize I use that as a collective term, but I don't mean it gendered. But anyway, the YouTube community is that it's so sporadic. I know they all have like these occasional videos that do incredibly well, and then they might go through a month of doing much worse. And then I think I worry about how much the stats must be all consuming for those lot, because it just seems you want to see those, like, as remember we spoke to Toby and he was like, you just want to see those green ticks in the stats bar. Mm-hmm. And it's just not, there's nothing you can do and to like ensure that it will happen. And a disappointing video that you put all that work into and seeing it performing really badly must be heartbreaking. It must be really tough.
Yeah. Inevitably with sponsorship, there is a element of it being a little temperamental in that your contracts are never usually that long. I don't really know how like long they go, but like, I haven't seen many people on more than like 3-year contracts. And I don't know, it's quite a turbulent space to operate in that like you don't really know the longevity in your role as you would in like maybe other jobs. Wait, is that fair?
What about sort of job security?
Well, I kind of think there can be like a element of feeling, because it is like quite fast paced, that somewhat your like profession is dictated by like appeasing people. If like the medium in which we like have some transactional relationship with these companies is through social media, then like it's with the people appeasing what the people want, which is what makes the companies happy. And so like there's a phenomenon where like essentially you change your climbing to appease what people want to see, and that can subtly happen with professional climbers, like professional climbers who operate on social media. But someone who is a YouTuber just has the finger on the pulse, like every video, as opposed
too much, don't you? Yeah
like that is like the burden of information kind of thing.
And also what's nice about in the position of the pro climber is you can talk to that person and that person can say, I would like to see you doing more of XYZ, whereas on YouTube all you've got is the number and you've got to try and guess what it was about that thing that did well and replicate it if you want to keep seeing that green tick. And I think that's just a recipe for a stress. Because the nice thing about like in the podcast, I can't talk about YouTube really because I don't do YouTube, but in the podcast game, like a good or a bad episode for us goes up or down by 20-25%. It's relatively small beer.
Oh really?
Yeah, it's all pretty on a level. Like
you get regular listeners, I guess.
Yeah, you get regular listeners, and it kind of just plods along and.
You don't get massive spikes, and similarly don't get massive troughs.
No. Mm. No, exactly, which is kind of nice. It's like it's more steady. I mean, we're very off topic now, but to go back to the previous thing, the old way of workers getting paid more, and I risk falling back into the cacotopian anti-work 1970s, but dare I say the word, unionize? Like if all the pro climbers formed the top end climbers formed a union and all said, right, we are not going to accept a sponsorship for less than this number, I'm not going to climb in any of your shoes for less than this number or equipment or whatever, the companies would still have to, I mean, as long as it's not ridiculous, obviously this would have to be a negotiation, but like that number would go up surely if everyone would agree and sort of accept that we have to be able to at least live on the money we're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. I feel like to like actually like set something like that up though, it requires quite a lot of conviction that you are being, or like climbers are being, underpaid.
Okay, so say I am a top climber and I say, Aidan, I'm forming a union, I'm going to help you get paid more money. Will you sign up?
I mean, yeah. But I have actually felt quite grateful. Well, kind of grateful at times. It is an interesting thing. It's not very public how much people get paid within climbing. I don't really know it. People don't like to talk about it.
But also companies don't like people talking about it either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, because
they don't want you telling someone else and then have them be like
unionizing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a sense. Big companies hate unions because it's, you know, it's harder to exploit people. I mean,
yeah.
I guess exploit is a very charged word, and I feel a bit bad for using that word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like operate without like a manager and like so negotiate my contracts with companies directly. And I find it really hard to know how much I'm worth. And if they like come forward with a suggestion, I'm like, I can't remotely live off that. Could I have some more? It's like kind of,
yeah.
It's kind of then based on like shot in the dark. And so it's really helpful to like talk to other climbers and see what is reasonable. And, but then it's also really hard to know because, maybe if other climbers work with different companies or in different countries, like it changes quite a lot. So it's like very hard to know. I like feel very awkward asking for too much and then obviously have a bias to ask for enough. And a union, this prospect of a union, even like I'd hope that it would give me some insight to what is maybe fair in this industry, because I still don't know what like, I still don't know what I'm worth to a company. So I have no idea if I'm like asking for a lot, being exploited. I have no idea.
Exactly.
And a union would help with that.
Yeah. I sort of, for you guys in your position, it really benefits everybody to be honest and to be transparent. You don't want to be telling everybody, you know, and announcing how much you're getting from every company. That's, you know, you don't want to do that. But it would help all of you guys to kind of raise things up a bit if you knew what each other were getting.
Yeah.
Because it benefits the companies a lot more than you guys to keep it to yourselves.
Yeah. For sure. And I try and have those discussions with people in similar positions now. But partly because I've been like pretty grateful for like people who have done that for me as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it would be mortifying, wouldn't it, to be having that contract negotiation and saying a number that you then get laughed at and like, no way we're going to pay that. It's just mortifying. It's embarrassing. So people want to avoid that, don't they?
Yeah. But then I have been in the scenario where I've like signed multi-year contracts and then spoken to people about it and like been laughed at for like
even how low it is.
Yeah. To even agreeing to anything.
You signed a contract you thought were lucrative but later discovered sucks.
Yeah. And then that's like, then that's awkward because then you're like, oh, well, actually, I'm probably just being exploited by you lot. And it also just doesn't do a service to other climbers as well, in that, like, if everyone always lowballs themselves, companies are going to go to a climber that will lowball themselves and not.
Yeah, this is, again, the benefit of the union situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So to so sort of sum up a little bit.
Yeah,
I think we did quite well to separate the argument, because the discussion for me is never about really, you know, should good climbers who don't have a following be making more money than people who have a social media following? I think that's a completely separate argument. I think people who have a good social media following should always be making money, because that's what they're doing. And like, everybody should have an opportunity to make a living out of climbing. If you're creative enough and entertaining enough and people want to watch the stuff or listen to the stuff that you produce, then that's just, you know, well done. And as we said earlier, it's harder to do that if you're not a really good climber. So it's all the more impressive. I think that's a separate debate.
I question why that role gets so much scrutiny from climbers.
Jealousy, I think, mostly.
I think it's mostly jealousy. But I also do wonder whether that role, the existence of that role, is affecting the role of a performance-focused climber. Like, I don't know if it gives some reference.
Yeah, I don't think it. Yeah, I don't think it does. And I think it's not a zero-sum game. It's not like more money for those people doesn't mean less money for you, because I think the money is coming from a completely different source. Those social media people are getting money for different reasons and normally from different sources. I think it's a completely different thing. So in my mind, those people deserve whatever money they're getting, because that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a different profession. And I think the elite climbing profession shouldn't be looking at those people. They should just be looking at the companies directly and be like, this is what we're providing you. This is the amount of money you make per year. We're getting 0.00001% of that. And we think we deserve a bit more.
I don't know. Having conviction in that feels hard. I don't know. Like, I can get by off money I make off sponsorship now. And I can go on, like, I can go on trips. I can just climb. I can just climb.
Yeah, it comes down to a difficult self-worth thing, isn't it? Of just like, how much is what I do worth, sort of thing.
Yeah, which is like very unmeasurable. And like,
should I be paid more than a nurse?
In many ways, look at my life. Like, what? It's pretty amazing. Like, whether I'm not on a footballer's salary, but like, I can be like, oh, I want to go to this boulder and climb it because it's a really cool boulder. And I can do that. I have the time to go climbing.
Well, lots of other people work in an office. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, if I can do that and not be making any savings, like, I don't know, maybe that's fine. I don't want to feel entitled to being like, oh, well, I'm really good at doing what I really like doing, so pay me more.
yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I do totally see that perspective. Maybe
I don't want to hammer that message too hard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you're not really a particularly like avaricious, money-driven sort of guy. So perhaps if there's a union, you should be just join it and stand somewhere at the back.
Yeah, no, it is true. It is true. But then also similarly,
don't
to
cross my picket line, you filthy scab. He's willing to work for, he's taken all the sponsorships.
Yeah, I wonder if anything like that will ever come about.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because like, I do get it, and I think fundamentally, because then you get into interesting questions of like comparison. It's like, should someone who climbs rocks for a living be paid more than a nurse?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, fundamentally, I don't think that should be the reference point, because I do think people, nurses, are severely underpaid.
I will happily say this on record, that nurses are the single most underpaid profession in the UK. But
like,
I believe I'm right in saying they're the lowest paid graduate profession, which is wild.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's appalling. But even if nurses were okay, maybe because that's almost a separate thing, I should change the topic. But you know, should a climber be paid more than a bin man?
Yeah, I mean, like, where do you draw the baseline?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because like, climbers are maybe not getting paid that well, but a lot of them are getting paid better than jobs that you'd definitely not rather do.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, on one point, it's like, should climbers be happy with their lot because they get to do a job that most people would want to do instead, even though they don't make that much money? Or should they be thinking, no, I want to be more like a footballer. Yes, I'm doing the job I want to do, and I would have done it for less, but I'm helping generate so much money, I deserve a cut of that.
Okay. Here's a good summary. Or like, here's a good opinion on that question, and you can see where you... I think two separate things. Irrespective of it, climbers should practice gratitude that they're allowed, they're like, can practice their climbing, and like, that is their role. Should do that anyway. Climbing's pretty great, and you're very fortunate. Well, I mean, maybe even non-professional climbers, it's helpful to practice some gratitude to have climbing in your life. Then also I think it's helpful to slightly have a line of questioning as to what value you provide for these sponsors and try and ask for something that aligns with that. And that's a very hard question, but I feel like they're separate things, right? I think it's unhelpful or unconstructive to just, I don't know, have a load of disdain for like the fact that you're not getting paid as much as that person or whoever. Like, essentially, no one wants to just be, well, no, actually, that's not true. Essentially, the great scenario is people get paid what is fair. The people get paid what they contribute back to these companies. And it's a very hard to measure quantity of money. But like, that's the question we're trying to answer. Nobody's want to just be like, no, okay, I'm going to retract that again. I wouldn't
difficult, isn't it?
I wouldn't want people just to be paid more for the sake of being paid more. I wouldn't want, like, I think down the line, I would not be comfortable to be find out I was just being massively overpaid and exploiting the company that I'm working with.
I don't think it's a lot of danger of that at the moment, but yes.
I don't think I'm exploiting Patagonia.
I don't think, not just at the minute. I think they're fine.
I think they're doing all right. You kind of just want it to be fair, right? So I think it's helpful to like have that like line of questioning to be like, oh, okay, what am I contributing for this company? And are they paying me that right, the right amount?
I like that there's an element of looking inward in that, but I do feel like there's a sort of psychological contradiction with both being very grateful for what you've got and also demanding more cash. You know, if you feel you're deserving more cash.
No, but there's very like, there's being like grateful for climbing and the role that climbing plays in your life.
And that you're able to do that.
And that you're able to do that. Like, I think that's helpful irrespective, like as in like someone who works a full-time job but gets on a climbing trip for a week, practicing gratitude for like the role that climbing has in your life, and it's something that brings you a lot of joy and you can do it for this one week in a year or something, like it's helpful. Just to, maybe that's just a more like general life thing. It's just like valuable to practice gratitude. Basically, it's not like constructive at all to feel bitter about not being able to do more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's nice.
Carry on. Do you have more to say on money?
There's always more things I want to say on money, mate.
I'm on money stuff to talk about.
Give me more. I think it's nice. I think fundamentally it is partly that about looking inwardly to think rather than just thinking, I think I should be paid more money, that having that thought process of what could I do to be more valuable is probably a more constructive thought process. And probably the companies would appreciate it more than just give me more cash.
Yeah,
but yeah. I do, there is like a kind of like, I've got like an itch in the back of my mind that just makes me feel that some people are just getting exploited here. Like, I think the sheer revenue figures, there is a way of looking at it of just like boiled down. Is this just a story of worker being exploited? And we can't really answer that question because we don't have all the figures, but I don't think I can rule it out. And it would be nice to be able to rule that out.
Mm. Yeah,
it's like, you know, if you look at people like no footballer in the Premiership is getting exploited. Like, they're wildly overpaid. They're exploiting the system in a sense because
don't know where all that comes from. But
however, football is getting that much money, less of it should just be going to individual people. Like, there should be a way of doing more good with that amount of money. But at least no one's worried about them getting exploited. Whereas like, we don't know that for sure. Like, there are some people that are very convinced that climbers are getting exploited, and we can't say, no, you're wrong. So that's a bit of an issue, isn't it? It'd be nice to be sure on that.
Mm. No, I agree. Okay. I had a line of thought, and it's going to be a bit vague, but I thought it came quite an interesting thing. Maybe it's actually two things. Firstly, ought we celebrate ambition within climbing for everyone? Because I realized this because of an attitude I had, like, towards friends, yourself being one of them. I would often be like, I'd often almost try and challenge, probably because I disagreed with it, the attitude of like, I won't try that because it's too hard for me. So I've like had a few conversations with yourself about climbs you could try. And this is completely separate from any sponsorship financial stuff, by the way. This was just like I was basically like thinking about the idea of like fear of failure initially, which got me into thinking about this. Of like, I have a few friends who like I know are physically capable of climbing harder than things that they actually end up trying. And I often am like, no, you should try it, definitely. But I realize that I am like making the case for like people setting ambitious goals within their climbing. And that's something that I really like. But like, I don't know whether like ambition should necessarily be celebrated within climbing. Like, I realize that within these scenarios, I'm like imposing that it should be in some ways. Like, often, like, I can think of yourself. I have this conversation a lot with Jack Palmieri, who's physically incredible as an athlete, won't really like spend much time projecting things. And I'm often like, oh, you should spend more time trying harder things. And I'm like, oh, I wonder like where that attitude comes from, whether that's actually helpful. And whether it is good, because it's not necessarily right for everyone. Like, as in, like, that's maybe not everyone's like most enjoyable part of climbing as well. And so, yeah, I just kind of wondered what you thought about that idea.
I like that. Yeah, it's like we shouldn't assume that people's goals, that people is to do a higher number. Like, perhaps we should try and encourage people to follow whatever makes them happiest, because the end goal should be maximal happiness from climbing, yeah. not maximum ability.
And I kind of like came across this because, well, I kind of thought about it in that context, but I'd had it as well with like, I'd thought about it in the past with training as well. Like, nearly everyone makes the assumption that the objective of like going climbing and like practicing climbing inside is to physically get better at climbing. Whereas, I don't know, development in climbing is maybe not kind of just development in climbing. It's like, maybe not like however you define that, is maybe not actually like an objective for many people. Like, it might even be like, people might just like want to spend more time outside climbing the level they are. They might even just actually really enjoy the sociable side of climbing, and that's irrespective of whether they're improving or not. And there are all these different avenues to climbing, which I feel we all like dip our toes into all of them to a certain degree. But I don't know if you have this, like, what are those diagrams called where you have like...
What, like Venn diagrams? Like spider diagrams?
Yeah, like spider diagrams. We all have our own like areas of emphasis, and we have our own like funny spider web of like what makes up climbing. And I was just like acknowledging the phenomenon for myself of trying to like push my spider diagram onto other people as well in this context. And I thought it was quite a nice idea. That's kind of like just like,
I think you're absolutely right. I think people should try and identify what really makes them happy. And I think some people sleepwalk into that kind of like progression mindset, because that's what everything's bombarded at us all, isn't it? It's like high number equals good.
Mm-hmm.
Get number higher, progression, you get better, like, and better is good. That's so drummed into us that I think some people kind of sleepwalk into that without really wanting it, or it's like really right for them. And we kind of spoke about it ages back when, like, I decided to not do any training that I don't enjoy. I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing any core workouts or anything. I just don't enjoy it. I'm not doing it. I don't want to progress in climbing more than I want to not do those workouts. I still want to improve, but
ironically, you actually improved.
I did. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. side effect, which is weird. But
I wonder if we'd be having this conversation if you got significantly worse at climbing.
Yeah, I know. It's not been acid tested, has it? It would be acid tested if I'd then been like, this is fun. I'm getting much worse.
Getting much worse. That's crazy. I'm really, really loving these board sessions.
Yeah, I used to be cruising these climbs and now I can't even touch them.
But I'm having fun.
Yeah, I think in reality I wouldn't have enjoyed that at all and I'd probably have gone straight back to it. So yeah, there's...
But I'm going to go ahead and say both me and you both represent a very niche subset of climbers.
Yeah. It's
all people who climb.
And also I think we know how good it feels to do something that you worked for and you really wanted. It is an amazing feeling. And so the optimistic part of me is like, when we kind of push people into that, are we just trying to think, we're trying to help them towards that feeling, which is really good.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I don't think it comes from like a place of like,
no, it doesn't come from overbearing. Yeah, it doesn't come from a bad place, but it comes from not necessarily a well thought out place.
Yeah, but I was more like, because I do get that point about like trying to like have founding it, like a certain experience, really satisfying, rewarding personally, and like thinking that somebody else could have that. But then I'm also not sure that it is the same for everyone. Like, yeah.
I don't think it is. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think the kind of the message of really consider whether that is right for someone before you push them into it, I think is a really good one.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And also like, I think I was challenging maybe the qualities around or like where we celebrate certain like traits within climbing, being really ambitious and setting like hard projects and goals being like a very celebrated thing within climbing, like climbing development being like, wow, yeah, we should be progressing, this kind of thing. I think it's helpful to just see all of these things as neither good nor bad. I was just kind of reflecting more recently on my own climbing, and there's a certain type of climbing that I've been like almost reticent to admit that I have like no motivation for. And it's quite a lot of like, basically I've had like loads of the last spell. Don't really know how long this spell is, this last era within my climbing. I've been really inspired and motivated for the lines, which are like really complex puzzles, feel really ambitious. I like have doubts whether I'm capable of doing them, or like kind of like feel like they're really projects for me. I'm putting a lot of energy and effort into them. And it gives a lot of structure to my training as well. And I find those really motivating. There are like days out, which I like to go around the lakes. Actually, I'm going to keep development out of it because I think that's its own like...
Yeah, separate.
It's its own separate thing. I actually really like doing easier problems. I went to Carrick before I came out here, like romped around the things, a load of things that I'd done in the past. And like, I remember like stopping off in Font and just like climbing all day with a pad. And like, that was really fun. But I have no, like, if I actually think about it, I have so little motivation for like the things in the middle ground, which things which I can maybe capable of doing relatively quickly. But like, I have to try physically pretty hard. Like, I don't know, actually,
that
like,
sort of not, middle mileage.
Thing. But no, yeah, like there's like a window in climbing.
Yeah, but trying then, hard, but not quite, not that hard. Like,
yeah. And there's like a.
You know, I reckon a lot of people feel like that.
There's a few boulders which, like, I'm like, oh, okay, no, that is an amazing climb. Like, in like the Globalist, I was like, well, that's amazing. I really want to find that anyway. But like, I definitely don't seek those kind of things out at all. I've just like not really been that, like just below what I know, just below my limit as well. So like things which like require quite a bit of effort, but like I kind of don't have so many doubts. I don't know. I just was kind of finding myself initially almost being a little defensive about like not really being motivated by that.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to at all.
Yeah, because I think basically this is a thing, and this is what I kind of assumed that some people would have the opposite way around, and they might really like doing those things which are like hard for them, but like they don't have doubts whether or not they'll do them, but like are a lot of effort and like might get a rewarding sensation for that. The kind of like the window which I don't have that much motivation by, they might have that for that and just like have no interest in like projecting things which are really ambitious for them.
Yeah,
and I think it was also like, wow, that's also fine.
That's also fine. And because I've got sort of like almost the least popular motivations, in the sense that I almost never, outside of font, and even in font relatively rarely, I don't really care for mileage. I don't really do mileage. I don't do many sevens at all. Like, yeah. I don't do them. Like, I like, and because
it's time.
Some people really like climbing as kind of like a art or a movement. They like the feeling of climbing. They like really enjoy that. And I think that's amazing for them. I don't really. I like climbing from, personally, what I love about climbing is solving puzzles, like a crossword puzzle. This is where I try and explain it to people sometimes. And it's like, for people who do crossword puzzles or Sudokus or whatever, you don't sit around doing easy ones. That's boring because you just fill it all in. That's rubbish. I like having to work hard and like try hard to do a puzzle. And then I find it really rewarding. And I've never really felt for mileage. And sometimes people kind of look down on that. And sometimes people say, well, you won't improve as fast. Does that matter? I'm doing what I enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. And the same applies to like what is deemed as a good quality climb, right? What makes a good climbing experience for a climber individually, and what like fulfills this high quality climb kind of constructed by like the climbing community, differs. I mean, I quite like it. I think you really like it. Some limestone crag around the Peak Strip. I have loads of fun on these kind of things, which I know about. Like, they're not objectively great problems, but like I enjoy them. I think the whole thing I'm kind of touching upon is this feeling that like we try and conform to this like idealized climber in terms of like our tastes and like our attitude towards climbing, and actually just trying to like explore kind of people trying to just establish what that is for themselves quite genuine.
Yeah, and the whole point of climbing for anyone is to get a lot of happiness and fulfillment out of it. And I think, yeah, understanding that the path to that is totally different for everyone, and to not like put that on other people. It's like you see, people might see a really strong kid in the gym climbing really well or climbing on the board, and they'll be like, oh, you've got to get outside. As if, because, you know, a lot of people feel like the outside climbing is the only climbing that really counts. But you don't really need to put that on someone else. Like, it's okay if you feel like that. But if that kid's having a good time, he might want to go outside, or he might not. And that's all right. You like, you can encourage, but you don't need to kind of, because like I'm kind of projecting here, because that was me when I was like getting into climbing and climbing all the time, really enjoying it. Like, some people literally said to me, this is all just training though. None of it means anything. The only stuff that matters is the rock. And I literally took that like a sponge and was like, this is only training. The only thing that matters is the rock. I must go to the rock. And I kind of had that belief because I was told to have that belief. But really, I mean, now I just love rock climbing for what it is. And like, I do, in my heart, I do just feel it's just a bit cooler. And like, that's just personal belief. Once you've swallowed that, you can't really get rid of it. But
cooler for you.
Cooler for me, exactly. I'm not going to project that onto anyone else, or at least I try very hard not to.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty wholesome there. Wholesome little nugget.
Yeah, wholesome nugget there. Yeah, get to keep that. Keep that at the end. That wasn't even part of the plan discussion.
No, I just kind of was like writing down some thoughts about all this, and I had in my notebook and I wrote a bullet point: fear of failure. Ought ambition be celebrated? Interesting lines of thought.
And that question mark. Did you write a question mark there?
Question mark.
Just one, or?
Yeah, just one. Just one. Yeah.
Okay. You don't go for the sort of three question marks and the interrobang or whatever.
No, my whole notebook is titled Spring?
Oh, I'd your notebooks, mate. This is great.
Spring, yeah. Well, we'll see.